the Antiwhite system and tune in to the Pro-White system at RadioArian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 23rd of September 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioArian.com. Well, we've got something a little bit different for you today. A good friend of mine, Captain John, has arranged for me to interview an elderly nationalist. He's 91 years old and he's been a nationalist since he was a child at school, it seems, from the interview, and he remembers a lot of things, a lot of important events, such as the war, what happened after the war, what happened with immigration. He's got a very interesting story to tell, and I thought you listeners would rather enjoy hearing from him as well. We're going to refer to him as Mr. I don't know his full name, and obviously we'd like to keep him as anonymous as possible. And the interview is going to begin now. I'm very pleased to make your acquaintance. Our mutual friend has told me that you're a long-time nationalist and you were involved in the union movement, Oswald Mosley's union movement after the war.
That's correct?
Yeah. What was it that brought you to nationalism then? Because there must have been a lot of anti-fascist fervour at the time, I would have thought, just after the war.
Well, yeah, but I was brought up in an atmosphere in the 1930s when patriotism was a thing. At school, for example, on Empire Day, we would march around the playground saluting the flag. And if November the 11th coincided with school day, we would march to the cenotaph and lay a wreath. So there was that atmosphere I was brought up in. And then, of course, the war came.
You would have had the patriotism, obviously, towards Britain. But then there was a war.
Right, yeah.
Then you got the war that was against the fascist countries and against National Socialism.
Yeah, well,
and against
that was the problem. We were fighting other nationalists instead of our true enemies, who were the communists.
And what was the general feeling like amongst other people in Britain at the time? Did they understand that they were fighting on the wrong side after the war?
No. Because they didn't realise that the excuse for the war was the problem in Poland, which dated back to the Versailles Treaty. We should never have given territory to Poland that was entirely inhabited by Germans. And of course, it was bound to lead to trouble. And we used that trouble as the excuse for when Germany went to the aid of their fellow Germans in Poland, we made the excuse to intervene. However, the Russians also invaded Poland, but we didn't go to war with Russia, did we?
No. And also, they were still given Poland at the end of the war as well. It was against Germany.
That was the most shocking thing. We completely abandoned them. And that was Churchill and Roosevelt at Yalta.
And what was the general British feeling amongst the general British public when that happened? Do you remember?
Well, I regret to say I don't think many people cared about it. They were sick and tired of the war anyway, and all the rationing and the blackouts and that. They were glad when peace came, whatever the settlement was going to be.
One thing I think shows that maybe people weren't so happy with it was that Churchill wasn't elected to Prime Minister at the end of the war. Is that correct? Was there?
Yeah. Well, that showed it, didn't he? It was they abandoned him completely, and of course by that time we were having trouble with the Jews in Palestine. So the excuse about the way the Jews were being treated in Germany just didn't work. Because, 784 British soldiers were murdered by the Jewish terrorists. And
wow.
There's no monument to them, but we've got all these Holocaust memorials, haven't we, all over the place.
And this is covered up, isn't it? This is just not talked about, that... There were these Jewish terrorists. So there was. Go on.
It's wicked. It's still going on because Victoria Park in London is going to be destroyed by having a huge Holocaust memorial costing £75 million, and £50 million of that was granted by. What was his name? The Prime Minister.
Cameron.
Who, of course, his family name is Leviter. He is the grandson of a Jewish banker who came to England in the closing years of Queen Victoria's reign. So he had an interest in it. And that's another thing that annoys me, is this deceptive aliases. Where they can do that. Say the name Cameron, and people think, oh, he's a Scotsman. And in fact, he's a Jew.
So the British people had a rude awakening after the war as to quite what the Jews were like, with them killing all these servicemen.
Yeah.
So
there was some trouble. For example, I understand that in Liverpool, when there was that particularly disgraceful one, the two soldiers who had been strangled by piano wire and their bodies hung up in an olive grove, when that was revealed, I understand that I think it was Liverpool where people attacked Marks and Spencer's shop. that did it then for the Jews.
So people would have been really, really furious at that. When did the gas chambers story come out then? Because was that known about at the time, or did people not really hear that?
Not until afterwards. Yeah. I think what it was, no one did more to incite the war than the Jews did. If you go right back to 1933, when Hitler came to power, what was this American Jew's name? Samuel Untermeyer formed the Anti-Nazi League, which became a worldwide movement. And in I can't remember the date offhand, but the Daily Express newspaper published a headline: "Judea declares war on Germany." Of course, that was 6 years before the war started. And of course, they kept up that correspondence.
So I'm aware of that newspaper heading. That's quite a famous thing on the internet today that people see it. And I guess everybody must have seen that. It was a daily newspaper with a large readership.
I expect a very large readership, yeah.
And
people were aware of what was going on.
And weren't the Daily Mail and the Daily Mirror, they were supportive of the British Union of Fascists originally, is that correct?
No, the Daily Mail did. The Daily Mail was.
Right.
And, what was the owner's name of the Daily Mail? He received a visit from a Jew who was... they traded under J. Lyons and Company, the catering people who owned cafes all over the place. He went to see the proprietor of the Daily Mail and told him that he would see that people didn't advertise in his newspaper. Oh dear.
That's the same tactics that they're using today on the newspapers. They've said that they're going to withdraw advertising
although the owner of the Daily Mail was a very rich man, he gave in. They're still standing up to them.
This shows how much influence that they have. You know, another thing that I was wondering is, you know, you look at it today and you see that they say that Oswald Mosley was an anti-Semite, but I don't think he really was. I don't think he really considered himself to be an anti-Semite. Was he very anti-Jewish in the things that he said?
No, because at his wedding to his first wife, Cynthia Curzon, I forget names so easily, but one of the guests was an extremely wealthy Jew who made his fortune in Argentina, both in cattle ranching and the railways. And so it showed that he only regarded the Jews really as one of the many hundred, literally, well, scores of racial and religious minorities in the then Great British Empire. And had they been loyal to Britain instead of turning against us, I'm sure there would have been no trouble with the Jews.
It's amazing that, you know, they were able to provoke this war, and then after provoking the war, they killed hundreds of British people in terrorist acts.
Yeah.
And yet today they're made out to be these wonderful people, and nobody...
Yeah.
Nobody knows about this. Arnold Lees used to speak out against them. Did you ever have any interactions with him?
He was a bit of an oddball, actually. He was he joined the British Fascisti, which was formed in 1920 by a woman, Rita somebody. It was the granddaughter of a British field marshal, Rita Borman, something like that her name was. And, of course, he regarded Mosley as a rival, you can understand, but it's a sort of personal jealousy, so I think that was. But he didn't take any much notice of them.
But he was much more extreme, I guess you could say, in his methods.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And how popular was he?
Arnold Lees?
Yes. How popular was he? I'm wondering. Was it just sort of known about by a small group that were in the fascist movement?
He wasn't generally so well known as Mosley was.
Right.
anybody who took an interest in politics would really have noticed him and what he was doing. Yeah. It never came to anything with this SSD. Though it's interesting to note that William Joyce was a member of the British SSD, and he got that scar on his face when the British SSD were used by other political parties to steward their meetings. And he got somebody, a communist, I suppose it would have been, slashed his face with a razor. That's why he had a great scar down his face. Poor old William George. But his heart was in the right place. And he never should have been hanged, because the only thing he made was to make a false representation when he applied for a British passport, because he was an American citizen.
He was accused of treason, wasn't he? But if he was an American citizen, yeah, how could he be accused of that?
But he couldn't be. No, that was it. And by the time he started broadcasting to Britain, he was a German. He had taken out German citizenship, so he was a German. And so we couldn't get at him. But of course, they twisted things around to make sure that we did. Yeah.
What was the general public response to the Nuremberg trials then? The fact that it was the winners of the war, the people claiming to be the victims, that were standing as the judges over the Germans, and the Germans weren't allowed to produce their own defence, basically. What was the general public reaction to that?
Well, as I say, the war was over, and I think the people were fed up. And we're only glad that the peace had come. And I don't think they really bothered about things like that. It's a shame to say. Only those of us who were interested in politics bothered about it. And it's so scandalous that the people who caused the war got away with it. And those poor devils whose unfortunate job it was to prosecute the war were tried as war criminals. This is quite wrong, in my view.
They were just trying to defend themselves. I mean, worse than wrong. Yeah. I mean, it's a kangaroo court, yeah. Total kangaroo court. Yeah. Well, after that, up until that point, I don't think we'd had very much immigration into Britain, and we ended up with the Windrush turning up, which was a requisitioned Strength Through Joy vessel that had been taken from Germany, and that was used to transport all these Jamaicans into Britain.
That's right.
What happened at that time? Was there a lot of anger at that? And what were the government saying was the reason why these Jamaicans were being brought into Britain?
Yeah, the idea was that they were going to clear up the bomb sites. Labour was required to clear up the bomb sites. This, of course, were everywhere in the British cities. And, of course, trouble started straight away. There was the Notting Hill riots in 1958. And that was a disgraceful thing, because only the white chaps who got involved in the fighting were prosecuted. Not a single black was brought before the court. And strangely enough, the judge on the circuit at the time was a Jew. Mr. Justice Salmon was his name. Because they were the white chaps. First offenders were sentenced to 4 years imprisonment, which is over the top, isn't it? The first offender they usually get a warning, don't they? Not a 4-year prison sentence.
And that was for defending themselves against blacks.
Yeah, the sudden eruption of a black community in Oxford. Oh, I know where I was for. It's the same. See, that was the trouble starting with the Jews, really, because it started when the Tsar began to clear them out of Russia and Poland before the First World War. And the Jewish immigration started in about 1890 and carried on. And then, of course, there was another big influx in the 1930s from Germany, you know, including the so-called Kinder transport, all the children arriving. Oh, these poor Jews fleeing refugees. I saw them. Their pockets stuffed with money, suitcases bolted with loot, and being driven off in limousines by their fellow Jews who claimed accommodation for them in Britain. Yeah,
we're
mugs, aren't we? That's what it is.
They like to make a huge thing about the supposed the Kinder transport, and look at the way they repaid the British afterwards. Didn't a lot of them turn out to be spies for the Soviets?
Yeah.
So
when the Holocaust story started, but I believe idea was that they were known. I say going back to 1933, and then they formed the Anti-Nazi League, causing the Daily Express to publish Judea declares war on Germany. So people were aware that the Jews had caused the war, and it was the most destructive war in history. Of both human life and material, housing, etc. But they thought, oh, we'd better show ourselves also as the victims. Crafty, eh?
Very, very crafty. Is it, so you think they were responsible for encouraging the immigration, this Windrush lot, and then the lot that came after that, were they calling for that and encouraging it?
You see, the black invasion sort of helped them in a way, because there were other people for the British people to revolt against.
Right, so it sort of, they can hide themselves. The more foreigners there are here, the less the Jews stand out, I guess.
That's about it. Yeah. And of course, the whole Holocaust story is completely ridiculous. And we were never able to go into the camp while it was under Russian occupation. And of course, there's all sorts of story, aren't there, that the gas chambers were built after the war.
Yeah, the chambers, chambers not attached, is it? And you were told that they were just throwing cyanide pellets in through holes in the roof, which wouldn't have done anything. It's not a gas, it's a pellet. And I don't think there's one autopsy report of anybody that was gassed during the war.
That's completely ridiculous. They say that the SS men were on the roof, dropping pellets through a hole in the roof. So, potassium cyanide is probably the deadliest poison going. The slightest whiff of it would kill you. You can't imagine the SS men living in the barracks that were right next door to the supposed gas chamber. It just doesn't add up.
None of it adds up. That's why they have to make laws to force people to go along with it and say they believe in it, and they have to force children to undergo all this brainwashing in the schools now. I'm just amazed that this could go on and the British people didn't do, you know, have a much larger nationalist movement and deal with it. Because the strength of, you know, their strength and power has got so much more since then. And you would think that British people would think, well, hang on, these people started the war. They've killed lots of British people in Palestine. They're terrorists. And now they're encouraging the invasion of the country. And we lost our empire due to that war.
Yeah, well, that was it. Yeah, if you think of it, after the war, from Germany's point of view, they were just back where they started, as a defeated and divided country. Whereas we started the war as the greatest empire in the world, the biggest navy and all that sort of thing, and we ended up with nothing. And yet we're supposed to have won. It's just crazy, isn't it?
And we're taught today to see the empire as a bad thing. I mean, you remember when you had these empire days and you were taught at school to be proud.
We were so proud of the empire in those days. You know, it was great. The civilizing effect it had, and so on. Like our rule in India kept all the trouble that they always had between the Muslims and the Hindus and the Sikhs and all that lot, ended under our rule. And of course, as soon as we left India, it all broke out again.
Well, how has it changed that they were suddenly allowed to come to Britain and claim citizenship? Because they didn't before then, did they? They were told they were part of the British Empire, but they didn't have to Britain. No. How did that happen?
Oh, no. No. Well, I think it was... Well, did it start with the Asians being kicked out by... what's his name? Idi Amin. And the British people were told that we had a moral duty to let them come and settle in Britain. And then, of course, South Africa became a republic. And Dr. Milan, he spoke to Nehru, offering the South African Indian community to be transported back to India. And they didn't want to go. They knew they were better off in South Africa under apartheid than they would be under so-called freedom in India. Yeah, the world's just crazy, isn't it?
I think non-whites are always better off with a white administration to keep the peace. They understand that in their own countries, but as soon as they set foot in Britain, suddenly the white man becomes a terrible racist, and they need to have special laws to protect them from criticism.
Oh, yeah.
And it's gone from saying, well, we need to accept them in as refugees to do the jobs we didn't want to do, to saying, well, now we have to have special quotas to put them in all the top jobs because they somehow have a right to be there.
Yeah. So you see what's happened there. You can hardly walk round the corner before you bump into a black or an Asian. And I know it really annoys me because my lounge where I'm speaking from now looks out onto the street where there's a primary school at the end. Now, I often think of myself, I think of my young army comrades who lost their lives in the war, believing that they were defending the society that they knew and cared about. And it's not their little great-grandchildren that are going to the school, but they're continental Europeans and blacks, Asians, and mixed race. I think those are God, they're sacrifices in vain. Look what's happening to Britain now. Yeah.
It's scandalous. It's absolutely scandalous. Do other people in your age group, do you think they feel the same way about it as you? Do you know?
I'm 91, so there aren't very many of my age group left.
I know, it's amazing. It's amazing. I feel very privileged to be talking to you. I was just wondering, whether other people feel as upset about it as you, or whether they just ignore it.
Mm.
You would like to think that.
I don't know. I think the British people are generally demoralised, and the slightest, if anybody gets up like that, you say, they're shouted down as racist or fascist or Nazi. They bring it all up, don't they?
Yeah, we need someone brave enough to speak up for us, but I don't know who it will be.
That's right.
But that's what we need. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on here and talking to me today. I really do appreciate that, and I'm sure my listeners will appreciate it too. And a big thanks to Captain John for arranging this.
Oh yes, he's a good chap, is John.
Definitely,
good
definitely. Okay, I thought that was really good, really interesting stuff there. Apparently, he's got a lot more information on how Churchill actually got into power in the first place and the people that put him in power, and maybe we'll conduct more interviews with him in the future. I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist. God bless and hail victory.
Radio Aryan. Dot.